support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier.
Hi, I'm your Alaska Live host. I'm Lori Neufeld. We have Andrew Castle here to introduce the cast and crew of King John.
Oh, hello, Lori. Thank you.
Hello.
Thanks for having us. This is Levi Ben Israel.
Hello.
Carrie Seward.
Hi.
Audrey Fox.
Hi.
There's Shannon Luster.
Hello.
Annabelle Heine.
Hi.
Michael Johnson.
Hello.
Nancy Fresco.
Hello.
Right on.
And I'm Andrew Castle.
Okay, and you are all characters in Shakespeare's King John, the summer production.
That's right. We are characters in Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater's production of King John this summer, performing for the next two weekends.
Until July 23rd.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And
I can tell you who the characters are if you'd like to.
Let's jump into a little bit of the plot and
sure.
Tell us the characters as you tell us the plot. Can you combine the two, I guess?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The thing we'll be performing tonight is just one of the subplots of the play that we've pulled out. It's a plot that Shakespeare completely made up inside the history of King John. It's a based on actual events story. So people in Shakespeare's time, the audience, would have seen names and events that they recognize from their history books. And so it's sort of like a mini-series now that would be based on real, torn from the headlines from 500 years before Shakespeare's time. So it tells the story of King John, who's played by Shannon, who is, in my character's point of view, the King of France. He, the King of England, not the rightful king, but he is asserting his authority as the King of England.
And for the radio audience, Shannon, the king, he is actually wearing blue tonight, and the rest of the cast is in black.
Yes,
so,
it's the king's,
you know,
the king's privilege.
Imagine that the king has a splash of color.
And it's actually, when I've seen photos of this of the our costumes, his costume is beautiful, gold, red, very luxurious. Mine is all blue and dull. I think there's something to be said there. I don't know. King John is he's asserting his power. He's asserting his kingness in England. And it's a time when the right of succession for the next king was not really set down yet. Like we know it today, where usually the son or the daughter becomes the next king.
It's so tumultuous.
It's very tumultuous. And so there's lots of people claiming the throne, and the fight is who is going to get it, who's going to fight the hardest for it. And so the little story that we're doing tonight is the results of King John's desperation to secure the throne, and he goes up against Arthur, who is played by Audrey, who is the son of the previous king. And this is one of the wonderful things about theater, where gender does not matter when it comes to playing parts. It's all about the character and the story that you tell. So Audrey is obviously a girl playing a boy in the play.
And that's in keeping with, in the spirit of Shakespeare, there were non-gender specific, and the roles were, but they had males and females.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It was the big tradition was that boys usually played it, because being in the theater and being an actor at Shakespeare's time was not something that was really well looked upon job. And usually, it was boys that played the younger girls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the struggle for who's going to be the king. And the story is, how does John become the king? What happens when he fights to keep a hold of his rule, and the eventual collapse of that plan into the foundation of the democracy and the republic that we know today here in the United States? King John and the Lords came up with this document that's called the Magna Carta now, which sort of established the idea that people who work in the country and work in the land should have a role in how that land is ruled. And this was very rudimentary, that led up to things like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, which we know today. So the story of King John leads to the signing of the Magna Carta by the king and the lords in the land to say, we're going to work together to make England and Great Britain a better place.
So there is a reason why we should be paying attention to history, and history told through Shakespeare, and it has echoes for today.
It really does. In the script of King John, the Magna Carta thing is not really mentioned, because people of the time would have known. So many productions, and ours included, add a little flavor in there so that you can see a version of the Magna Carta that they signed. But absolutely, Shakespeare is, people say, how do you make it relevant? It's relevant because it tells, human stories. How do you get power? What do you do to keep that power? How far are you willing to go to get what you want? to rule a country. And that's what King John is all about.
And in King John, I've heard that you've put together some pretty amazing fight scenes also.
They
may
are,
not be happening here in the Radio KUAC Archive Studio, but...
No, there's sometimes, you know, 12 people up there going at each other on the stage, and they're wielding their swords and bashing their shields and yelling and screaming. And James Bartlett, who is an amazing sound designer, has created soundscapes of battles. And there were mornings that we sat around and recorded us going, rah, rah, and cheering and moaning and doing all this stuff that you do in a battle. And he has turned those into like this beautiful soundscape that goes on in the background of the, so when you're watching the fights, it's not just what you're seeing on stage. All of your senses are really putting you into what it's like to be just surrounded by the violence and the chaos that would be, a 12th century battle.
So those folks that live up there in the apartments by Jack Townsend Point really get some interesting soundscapes go with their evenings.
They absolutely do. And then they get Shannon's beautiful voice coming in through their windows for, 3 hours a night, which is great.
Right, because in Shakespeare Theater and in the opera and these performances, you are not, as the actors, amplified, but at times you have some things that go on in the background that have some amplification or part of the scene.
Yeah, part of our director Bruce Rogers' concept was to make it both intimate and very epic at the same time. And how do you tell a little story on stage that's just in a little part of the stage? And James, again, has hidden some microphones and stuff in there. So particularly, a scene you'll be hearing tonight and a scene between Levi and Audrey is in one of those places. And it makes this cool, very echoey sound. And they can be very close together and really getting some of that human moments that don't mean they have to really project and lose some of the intimacy and the emotions in their voices. So it's great to have that augmentation out there.
What a cool insight into what people will experience if they go to see the King John. Jack Townsend Point, Thursday, mm-hmm. Friday, Saturdays at 7:30, mm-hmm. and matinees on Sundays at 2. And
how did you? That's amazing.
Yeah,
I
can't wait to see the production also. So, I know my husband and I have a plan to go tomorrow night. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's supposed to be beautiful.
And,
on that, we perform Rain or Shine.
That's right.
That's how the company goes.
Yes.
And one of the things about this show is it's even more beautiful in the rain. The moodiness of the story, the drama of the story, the conflict, scene with the clouds and rain coming down and rain dripping off the swords and, just that mood of gloom and doom and where is the hope coming from?
Really. How about some forest fire haze in the background?
That we're not so much a fan of. It really interferes with our instruments.
Yes,
we don't.
Voice, yes.
We don't like that.
Yeah, well, we
but
might
you can't
have
help that. I mean,
a little bit of that to contend with. Mm-hmm. And
there is actually a line that one of the characters has that says, "The sun has turned red." Because something bad happens in the play. And so it's that sort of moments. It's those magical moments that happen from performing outside that you could never, ever recreate inside. So if a character says, "Oh my God, the sun has turned red with blood," and the audience looks up and the sun is red with blood, it just adds little things that you could never create artificially.
I've definitely been at an outdoor performance of Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater with just at the right time, a rainbow appears. And it's just those magical moments that mm-hmm. you don't have indoors and that you have outside. And you guys are now at Jack Townsend Point. You've been there for a few years, but you've
over
always
a decade
been outside.
Now.
Yeah.
Over a decade now.
Wow.
Yeah. It started, our director, Bruce Rogers, did a show of the Scottish play. I won't curse us by saying the name of that play.
Of course.
With Fairbanks Drama Association, a bunch of his friends. And after that show closed, they're like, "We should do this outside every summer." And so the next summer they did. They did Twelfth Night on the banks of the Chena River.
How many years ago was that?
That was now 25 years ago.
So that was the inception. That was when Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater was born.
Yep. Just like we're a bunch of friends that have done a bunch of shows together. Yeah. They were a bunch of friends that we should do this all the time. Nobody's doing this. Let's do this crazy thing. And so they started at banks of the Chena River and then in the Dog Mushers Field up at Birch Hill. And then we did it at Blaine Lake. And now we've been at Jack Townsend Point in this great partnership with the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Summer Sessions for over 10 years now to have a space up there that we've sort of made our summer home. It's just wonderful.
It's a truly beautiful. Wonderful space out in the middle of the woods.
It
you just can't
really
get better than that.
Yeah. Yeah, really. And I've seen you do all kind of in the round, and usually you're surrounded on at least three sides by the audience, mm-hmm. and it's really, you feel a part of it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I do when I'm up there. I don't know how you guys feel, but I think
it does. It feels like you've made us a part of it when we're sitting, you know, on all three sides. Well, the thing coming in from all different entrances and
theater really exists when performers and an audience come together in the same space. Without both of those pieces, it's just us rehearsing and having fun. But when an audience comes in, it turns into the magic of the performing arts, into theater. We can't do what we do without the audience. And if the audience was just sitting there, it'd be very boring to stare at the empty stage for a while, although a lovely set that we have. But it really is the place where those two things come together that the magic of theater happens.
And also, interestingly, about Shakespeare in particular, is that there isn't that fourth wall that we have in the modern theater.
You're so right, Levi.
For Shakespeare, yeah. It's just about getting the audience out there and actually engaging with them. All of the characters are engaged with the audience as a member of the action. Often as an actor, I think, oh, these people right now, they're the voices in my head, so I'm going to have this conversation with them to work out this piece of drama. Whereas if you were doing a modern play, you'd have to work out that drama with this invisible wall that luckily we don't have. So it's great to hear from an audience perspective that as a company, you feel like you're a part of the action. And when I'm sitting there watching the rehearsals, I feel the same thing.
And it's interesting that we've turned in part of Alaska Live to a bit of an audience here too, because, you know, we've got this new remodeled, repurposed studio that we call our KUAC Alaska Live Archive Studio. And that's where we're doing the show tonight here right now. And we have room for an audience. We've got some audience here tonight. It's very cool.
It's a great vibe in here, man.
Yeah.
We are excited to
Thanks,
play
Andrew.
In here.
Well, hey, let's jump on in and we can talk a little bit more about the production after we hear about the scene that you're going to do and from our actors.
So we've cut the show down into it's about 30 minutes, I think, is how long the performance will turn out to be. And again, it's just one little subplot out of many, many, many things going on there. Many of the characters in the show are not represented in the story that we're telling, but really wanted to boil down to the conflict over Arthur. Because in the real history of the show, what happens to Arthur, no one really knows in the historical record. And so Shakespeare took his creative liberties to tell this story of what may have happened to Arthur of Brittany in the 12th century. All right.
We have the production of King John here at the KUAC Alaska Live Studios. Take it away, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater.
Before Angiers, well met, brave Austria. Arthur, that great forerunner of thy blood, Richard that robbed the lion of his heart and fought the holy wars in Palestine, by this duke came early to his grave. And for our amends, hither is he come to spread his colors, boy, in thy behalf, and to rebuke the usurpation of thy unnatural uncle, English John. Embrace him, love him, give him welcome hither.
God shall forgive you, Coeur de Lion's death, the rather that you give his offspring life. Shall wing their right under your wings of war, I give you welcome with powerless hand, but with a heart full of unstained love. Welcome before the gates of Angiers, Duke.
A noble boy, who would not do thee right?
To my home I will no more return till Angiers and the right thou hast in France, even till that England salute thee for her king. Till then, fair boy, will I not think of home, but follow arms.
Oh, take his mother's thanks, a widow's thanks, till your strong hand shall help to give him strength to make a more requital to your love.
Well then, to work. Our cannon shall be bent against the brows of this resisting town. We'll lay before this town our royal bones, wade to the marketplace in Frenchman's blood, but we will make it subject to this boy.
England, impatient of your just demands, hath put himself in arms. They are at hand to parley or to fight. Therefore prepare.
Peace be to France, if France and peace permit our just and lineal entrance to our town. If not, bleed, France, and peace ascend to heaven, whilst we, God's wrathful agents, do correct that proud contempt that beats his peace to heaven.
Peace be to England, if that war return from France to England there to live in peace. This toil of ours should be a work of thine. Look here, upon thy brother Geoffrey's face. That Geoffrey was thy elder brother born, and this his son. England was Geoffrey's right, and this is Geoffrey's, in the name of God. How comes it then that thou art called a king, when living blood doth in these temples beat, which owe the crown that thou art masterest?
Alack, thou dost usurp authority.
Thou and thine usurp the dominations, royalties, and rights of this oppressed boy. This is thy eldest son's son.
Bedlam, have done.
I have but this to say.
Peace, lady, pause, or be more temperate. Some trumpet summon hither to the wall, these men of Angiers. Let us hear them speak whose title they admit, Arthur's or John's.
Who is it that hath warned us to the wall?
'Tis France for England.
England for itself. You men of Angiers, and my loving subjects.
You loving men of Angiers, Arthur's subjects.
We are the King of England's subjects. For him, and in his right, we hold this town.
Acknowledge then the king, and let me in.
That can we not. But he that proves the king, to him we will prove loyal. Till that time, have we rammed up our gates against the world.
Doth not the crown of England prove the king? And if not that, I bring you witnesses, 15,000 hearts of England's breed, to verify our titles with their lives.
As many as in well-born blood as those stand in his face to contradict his claim.
Till you compound whose right is worthiest, we four, the worthiest, hold the right from both.
Then God forgive the sins of all those souls that to their everlasting residence before the dew of evening fall shall fleet in dreadful trial of our kingdom's king.
Amen. Amen. Mount, chevaliers, to arms!
Blood hath bought blood, and blows have answered blows. Strength matched with strength, and power confronted power. Both are alike, and both alike we like. One must prove greatest, while they weigh so even. We hold our town for neither, yet for both.
France, hast thou yet more blood to cast away?
England, thou hast not saved one drop of blood in this hot trial more than we of France, and by this hand, I swear, will put thee down.
Whose party do the townsmen yet admit?
Speak, citizens, for England, who's your king?
The King of England, when we know the king.
Know him in us that here hold up his right.
In us that are our own great deputy.
Hear us, great kings. Vouchsafe a while to stay, and I shall show you peace and fair-faced league. Win you this city without stroke or wound. Rescue those breathing lives to die in beds that here come sacrifices for the field. Persever not, but hear us, mighty kings. That daughter there of Spain, the Lady Blanche, is near to England. Look upon the years of Louis, the Dauphin, and that lovely maid. Their union shall do more than battery can to our fast-closed gates. For at this match, with swifter spleen than powder cannon force, the mouth of passage shall we fling wide open and give you entrance. But without this match, the sea enraged is not half so deaf. Lions more confident, mountains and rocks more free from motion, no, not death himself, in mortal fury, hath so peremptory as we to keep this city.
Speak, England, first, that has been forward first, to speak unto the city, what say you?
If that the Dauphin there, thy princely son, can in this book of beauty read, I love, her dowry shall weigh equal with a queen, in titles, honors, and promotions, as she, in beauty, education, blood, holds hand with any princess in this world.
What sayest thou, boy?
Prince Dauphin, can you love this lady?
Nay, ask me if I can refrain from love, for I do love her most unfeignedly.
Then do I give Vauquesne, Touraine, Maine, Poitiers, and Anjou, these five provinces, with her to thee, and this addition more, for 30,000 marks of English coin. Philip of France, if thou be pleased withal, command thy son and daughter to join hands.
It likes us well. Young princes, close your hands.
And your lips, too.
Now, citizens of Angiers, open your gates. Let in that amity which you have made, for at St. Mary's Chapel presently the rites of marriage shall be solemnized. Is not the Lady Constance in this troop? I know she is not, for this match made up, her presence would have interrupted much. Where is she and her son? Tell me, who knows?
She is sad and passionate at your Highness's tent.
Brother of England, how may we content this widow lady?
We will heal up all, for we'll create young Arthur, Duke of Brittany, and Earl of Richmond, and this rich fair town we'll make him lord of. I trust we shall, if not fill up the measure of her will, yet in some measure satisfy her so that we will stop her exclamations.
Gone to be married? Gone to swear a peace? False blood to false blood joined? Gone to be friends?
I do beseech you, madam, be content.
At thy birth, dear boy, nature and fortune joined to make thee great. I will instruct my sorrows to be proud, for grief is proud and makes his owner stoop. To me and to the state of my great grief let kings assemble. Here's my throne. Bid kings come bow to it.
This blessed day ever in France shall be kept festival. The yearly course that brings this day about shall never see it but a holy day.
A wicked day and not a holy day. This day all things begun come to ill end. Yea, faith itself to hollow falsehood change.
My heaven, lady, shall have no cause to curse the fair proceedings of this day.
Oh, if thou grant my need, which only lives but the death of faith, that need must needs infer this principle, that faith would live again by death of need. Oh, then tread down my need, and faith mounts up. Oh, keep my need up, and faith is trodden down.
England, I will fall from thee.
O fair return of banished majesty!
France, thou shalt rule this hour within this hour. Draw a puissance together. France, I am burned up with inflaming wrath, a rage whose heat hath this condition, that nothing may allay, nothing but blood, the blood and dearest valued blood of France.
Thy rage shall burn thee up, and thou shalt turn to ashes, ere our blood shall quench that fire. Look to thyself, thou art in jeopardy.
No more than he that threats. To arms, let's hie! Hubert, keep this boy. Cousin, look not sad. Thy uncle will be as dear to thee as thy father was.
Oh, this will make my mother die with grief.
Oh, come hither, Hubert. Oh, my gentle Hubert, I love thee well. And by my troth, I think thou lovest me well.
So well so that what you bid me undertake, though that my death were adjunct to my act, by heaven, I would do it.
Oh, do not, I know thou wouldst. Good, Hubert. Hubert, Hubert, throw thine eye on yon young boy. I'll tell thee what, my friend. He is a very serpent in my way, and wheresoever this foot of mine doth tread, he lies before me. Dost thou understand me? Thou art his keeper.
And I shall keep him so, that he shall not offend your majesty.
Death.
My lord.
A grave.
He shall not live.
Enough. I could be merry now. Hubert, I love thee. Well, I'll not say what I intend for thee. Remember. For England, cousin, go. Hubert shall be your man. Attend on you with all true duty. On towards Calais. Ho!
So, by a roaring tempest on the flood, a whole armada of convicted sail is scattered and disjoined from fellowship.
Courage and comfort, all shall yet go well.
What can go well when we have run so ill? Are we not beaten? Is not Angers lost? Are 13 prisoner? And bloody England, into England gone, or bearing interruption, spite of France. Oh, look who comes here.
Death, death, O amiable, lovely death, thou odoriferous stench, sound rottenness, arise forth from the couch of lasting night, thou hate and terror to prosperity, and I will kiss thy detestable bones. And put thy eyeballs in thy vaulty brows, and wring these fingers with thy household worms, and stop this gap of breath with fulsome dust, and be a carrion monster like thyself. Come, grin on me, and I will think thou smilest, and busy thee as thy wife. Misery's love, oh, come to me!
Oh, fair affliction, peace!
No, no, I will not! Having breath to cry, young Arthur is my son, and he is lost. I am not mad. I would to heaven I were, for then 'tis like I should forget myself. Oh, if I could, what grief I should I forget? My reasonable part produces reason, how I may be delivered of these woes and teach me to kill or hang myself. If I were mad, I should forget my son, or madly think a babe of clouts were he. I am not mad. Too well I feel the different plague of each calamity. My poor child is a prisoner. I have heard say that we shall see and know our friends in heaven. If that be true, I shall see my boy again, and he will look as hollow as a ghost, as dim and meager as an ague's fit. And so he'll die. And so, rising again, when I shall meet him in the court of heaven, I shall not know him. Therefore never, never must I behold my pretty Arthur more. Grief fills the room up of my absent child, lies in his bed, walks up and down with me, puts on his pretty looks, repeats his words, remembers me of all his gracious parts, stuffs out his vacant garments with his form. Fare you well. Had you such a loss as I could give better comfort than you do. I will not keep this form upon my head when there is such disorder in my wit. Oh, Lord! My boy, my Arthur, my fair son, my life, my joy, my food, my all the world, my widow comfort and my sorrow's cure.
I fear some outrage, and I'll follow her.
John hath seized Arthur, and it cannot be that while warm life plays in that infant's veins, the misplaced John should entertain an hour. What shall I gain by young Arthur's fall? In the right of Lady Blanche may then make all the claim that Arthur did. Maybe he will not touch young Arthur's life, but hold him safe in his imprisonment.
Heed me these irons hot, and look thou stand within the arras. When I strike my foot upon the bosom of the ground, rush forth, and bind the boy that you shall find with me, fast to the chair. Be heedful, hence, and watch. Young lad, come forth. I have to say with you.
Good morrow, Hubert.
Good morrow, little prince.
You are sad.
Indeed, I have been merrier.
Mercy on me. Methinks nobody should be sad but I. I should be as merry as the day is long, and so I would be here, but that I doubt my uncle practices more harm to me. He is afraid of me, and I of him. Is it my fault that I was Geoffrey's son? No, indeed it's not. And I would to heaven I were your son, so you would love me, Hubert.
If I talk to him with his incense prate, he will awake my mercy, which lies dead. Therefore I will be sudden and dispatch.
Are you sick, Hubert? You look pale today. In sooth, I would you were a little sick, that I might sit all night and watch with you. I warrant I love you more than you do me.
His words do take possession of my bosom. Read here, young Arthur. I must be brief, lest resolution drop out at mine eyes in tender womanish tears. Can you not read it? Is it not fair writ?
Too fairly, Hubert, for so foul effect. Must you with hot irons burn out both mine eyes?
Young boy, I must.
And will you?
And I will.
Have you the heart? If heaven be pleased that you must use me ill, why then you must. Will you put out mine eyes? These eyes that never did nor never shall so much as frown on you?
I have sworn to do it. And with hot irons must I burn them out.
Ah, none but in this iron age would do it. The iron of itself, though heat red hot, approaching near these eyes would drink my tears and quench its fiery indignation. Even in the matter of mine innocence. Nay, after that, consume away and rust, but for containing fire to harm mine eye. Are you more stubborn hard than hammered iron? And if an angel should have come to me and told me Hubert should put out mine eyes, I would not have believed him. No tongue but Hubert.
Come forth! Do as I bid you do!
Oh, save me, Hubert, save me! My eyes are out, even with the fierce looks of this bloody man.
Give me the iron, I say. Bind him here!
I will not struggle. I will stand stone still. For God's sake, Hubert, let me not be bound. Nay, hear me, Hubert, drive but this man away, and I will sit as quiet as a lamb. I will not stir, nor wince, nor speak a word, nor look upon the iron angrily. Thrust but this man away, and I'll forgive you, whatever torment you do put me to.
Go, stand within. Leave me alone with him. Come, boy. Prepare yourself.
Is there no remedy?
None, but to lose your eyes.
Oh, heaven, that there were but a mote in yours. A grain, a dust, a gnat, a wandering hair, any annoyance in that precious sense. Then, feeling what small things are boisterous there, your vile intent must needs seem horrible.
Is this your promise?
Go to! Hold your tongue!
Let me not hold my tongue. Let me not, Hubert. Or, Hubert, if you will, cut out my tongue, so I may keep mine eyes. Oh, spare mine eyes, though to no use, but still to look on you. Lo, by my troth, the instrument is cold and would not harm me.
I can heat it, boy.
No, in good sooth, the fire is dead with grief. There is no malice in this burning coal. The breath of heaven hath blown his spirit out and strewed repentant ashes on his head.
But with my breath I can revive it, boy.
And if you do, you will but make it blush and glow with shame of your proceedings, Hubert. Nay, it perchance will sparkle in your eyes, and like a dog that is compelled to fight, snatch at his master that doth tar him on. All things that you should use to do me wrong deny their office. Only you do lack that mercy which fierce fire and iron extends, creatures of note for mercy lacking uses.
We'll see to live. I will not touch thine eye for all the treasure that thine uncle owes. Yet did I swear, and did I purpose, boy, with this very same iron, to burn them out.
Oh, now you look like Hubert. All this while you were disguises.
Peace, no more. Adieu. Your uncle must not know, but you are dead. I'll fill these dogged spies with false reports. And, pretty child, sleep doubtless and secure that Hubert, for the wealth of all the world, will not offend thee.
Oh, heaven, I thank you, Hubert.
No more. Go closely in with me. Much danger do I undergo for thee.
I know, dramatic.
Wow, this is quite a great scene that you achieved for radio and here in the KUAC Archive Studio for filming, too. And without all the costumes and the props, I still was on the edge of my seat. I mean, was Hubert going to put the eyes out of his, you know, blessed good. Nephew?
Yeah, I ask him that all the time, and Levi always answers,
I'm going to at the beginning of the scene.
Yeah. He's sworn to do it. He's
sworn to do it. And, you know, the politics and the love of power is really getting to humans in King John, it seems, as though, and making them less human. But then the humanness comes out, as we saw there at the end. He's going to hide the child, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I really hope you come and see the way that that ends.
Yeah, that's why I left it there.
It gets more tragic for Hubert.
It does. But one of the things is, like, that Hubert Arthur scene, it does not exist in history. It's not a real thing that happened. No one really knows what happened to Arthur. That it's pure Shakespeare. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful Shakespeare scene. The argument, and Arthur defends himself and comes out of that situation just from being pure of heart and reason and expressing and reaching out and trying to love the other character and not being afraid, not being angry, just being like, how can you possibly do that? And the scene that you guys do, it's so beautiful.
It is beautiful. Audrey, can I speak to you real quick?
Yes, you can.
Audrey, you play Arthur, and you did it so wonderfully here tonight with this reading. And what is that like being on stage? Is this your first time with Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater other than the Groundlings? Or you've been with the summer production and the winter production before?
This is my first time doing a Shakespeare main stage production, although I have done the camps numerous times.
I bet the Groundling camps are for up-and-coming actors such as yourself. And then when you get that experience, you make it on the main stage with actors that have been doing it for years. And boy, I think you're ready. It's obvious that you tried out and you got the part of Arthur. You almost seem like you're this strong child pleading, but you're on the verge of crying yet not. And that's really, it's convincing.
Thank you. I try.
It really is, Audrey. It's convincing. And how old are you?
I'm 12.
Wow. And you are on the main stage with a main character that's having to really emote some incredibly, you know, fear and the joy and the family. And yeah. Is your father in this play also? I mean, you know, Arthur's father?
No, he's dead.
Yeah. Of course he is.
He was the former king. Geoffrey was the king right before John has taken over. And so. Right. King of France is fighting for Arthur's right.
So you've been orphaned, I guess.
Yes.
Actually, just to clear the history up about that a little bit, right? Yeah. Wasn't it Richard was the king? Geoffrey was never the king. He died before his opportunity to take the throne, but he had a son.
Yes.
So actually, Geoffrey wasn't quite ever the king, which is why there's the contention with King John, because Geoffrey, being the eldest son, never actually assumed the throne. Richard assumed the throne, who was the second oldest, and then died during the Crusades. And
killed
John,
by Austria.
Right. So then John took the throne, and now they're fighting for Arthur's right as Geoffrey's son.
Oh, it's confusing, but yet not so much, because everybody's fighting for power. Everybody, you know, thinks it's theirs.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just knew there was a listener out there.
Yeah.
Was like, Geoffrey was never king.
That's, yeah. King Geoffrey. I don't remember that name.
Yeah.
You could see them shaking their heads and going, no, yelling at the radio. Yes, of course. Of course. And if you want to see more of King John in its full glory of costumes and the sound design, You're running through July 23rd at Jack Townsend Point.
Yeah, and there's many more characters. Like, yeah. Carrie Seward was reading in for Sarah McMillan's character of Constance. And so there's a lot, there's many more people. Unfortunately, for time and for space, we had to, you know, pare it down to just this. But there's so much more to the story.
Yeah.
There's also the role of the Vatican. Like, they put their hat in the ring to decide who's going to be the next king, and they get into that whole power play. And yeah. So there's, and then Annabelle, who plays Louis the Dauphin.
Oh, yeah,
has,
Annabelle, can we talk to you real quick?
Has, you know, all these great battle scenes to lead the armies of France. Because my character, the King of France, goes back home to France to do important governing. So I sort of vanish halfway through the show, but I turn it all over to my son, the Dauphin.
And Annabelle, you are young, but I know I've seen you on the Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater main stage, especially last year. Your character was a moving performance by you last year.
Thank
in
you. Titus Andronicus.
Titus Andronicus, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And this year you're on the main stage again. Did you come up through the Groundlings program also?
Yeah. So I did 9 years of Groundlings as a student, actually, and then I've been assistant teaching for last year. So yeah, Groundlings was definitely incredible training for me. And then this is my fifth outdoor main stage with Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, but I've done some indoor ones too.
And your character has some definite gravity in this play also.
Yeah.
And you get a few more speaking roles, I guess, in this one, because last year you were struck mute.
Yeah, a few more lines.
Except they're still talking about cutting out tongues in this one, yeah. But in this one your tongue does not get cut out.
I have a tongue and two hands.
Yes. But I hear there are some severed heads.
Yes.
Nancy, you want to come up and talk? I noticed in your bio that was one of those things you're like, "Oh my, severed heads."
Yeah, and when I told my friends that I was coming to participate in this radio piece, those who had seen the production already said, "Now that's interesting, because we don't really think your character is so much of a radio character." as someone already mentioned, I've got a bit of a backstory as the Duke of Austria, in that I killed the previous king, Richard the Lionhearted. So I have a little bit of an arrogance problem walking around wearing his lionskin cloak and doing a lot of strutting. So I think there may be some members of the audience who are kind of rooting for my head to not remain attached to my body.
That is, by the way, if I could say, the decapitation and the death of Austria, which we stage, is a very, very dramatic fight scene. And
yeah.
Brian Kramer and David Leslie, who worked together to make the fights happen, did a great job to make the moment where Nancy dies like really, really visceral for the audience.
I do feel like I was given a gift in being given an incredibly fun role, but also one that challenges me as an actor and makes me think about who this character is. Playing a very arrogant male character is delightfully fun and challenging. And I'm also doing props for the show.
Oh, you
and,
are!
And that when I was asked, "Oh, will you help out with props?" And then I was told which role I'd been assigned, I realized I got to make my own severed head with my two small children, who are also in the production, really avidly helping me to make my severed head. So this is very much a family production, and we encourage people to, you know, bring their kids if they would enjoy that sort of family togetherness.
It's staged in a way that's not.
It's
gory.
Staged,
it's,
right?
It's, no, it's make believe.
Yeah, it's
clearly make believe.
Right.
Yeah, it's not made ridiculous, but it's made so that it's. I don't think it would be terrifying. I don't know if others agree. I would say that children 8 and up would probably really enjoy the production.
Great.
I will say this, though, as somebody who has a great affection for Nancy, I have had a very tough time even just watching the death of Austria, because the fight scenes are pretty brutal. They're not graphic by any means. There's no graphic blood or violence, but the actors really do commit to the world of the play and the world of what's going on. And because Nancy's been bringing bread to the cast for every rehearsal, to see her surrounded by a bunch of guys and then beheaded, it wrenches my heart.
And the costuming, you got put in a lion cloak, and in 80 degrees, that has to be very pleasant for you. Or maybe, you know.
Yeah, we all are we're enjoying the fact that we've been getting wonderful weather for these performances. Yes. The audience is happy. It's beautiful. Yes. But we are wearing very authentic costuming. Stephanie Kramer has made incredibly gorgeous period authentic costumes, which means that we're wearing these sort of chemise shirts and dark pants and then long tunics with long leather belts. Mine sort of feels a chain little mail. Like upholstery. Yeah. And then there's chain. Yeah,
I'm wearing actual full chain mail. That gets
actual chain mail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has to be heavy.
Long sleeve. It's aluminum, so okay. It's I can wear it, but it's definitely I feel the weight of my character for sure.
That is amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to see the costuming, and yeah, that's
she made beautiful costumes.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a few pieces of actual steel chain mail that get shuffled around between our we have a large cast with men at arms and it's wonderful because everyone's involved. People come on and off stage and you get the feel of there being many people involved in these battles and especially as mentioned with the surround sound. Mm-hmm. You get that clamor as well as the more intimate feel in scenes with a smaller number of people.
And Shannon, we didn't. The king. We have yet to speak with you since we heard you playing such a dramatic role also. And how did you go into the tryouts for King John thinking that you wanted to be the king?
Well, I did have come to this project with a lot of preconceptions about King John, mm-hmm. because we say King John, and a lot of times people that aren't real steeped in ancient history don't know who we're referring to. But if I were to say Prince John, the same character from the Robin Hood movies and stories, then you'd know exactly who we're talking about. And so King John is basically the same character, just now he's become king. Richard the Lionheart is dead. Now he's taken over. And so I have all those preconceptions from him being the villain from Robin Hood. And he's a slightly different character here. He's a little stronger, but we find those vile moments and those moments where he's weak and less than an ideal king, to be honest with you. So I was really excited to kind of flesh out this King John character, find out who he was. And it's just been a joy. And I love the history, too. I'm a history nerd. And
this is one of Shakespeare's historic plays.
It really is. So and it's really remarkably accurate. There are some things that he consciously makes up. There's some gaps that he fills in. But if I think about writing, if I was going to write a play in 1600 about something that happened in 1200, I have no idea how he knew how much he did. So William Shakespeare, in addition to being a smart guy, an incredible poet, was really a historian. You know, it's amazing how much they knew in 1600 about stuff that happened 400 years before.
400 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is really amazing to hear you say that it was very much based on true events,
right.
But, embellished and filled in the gaps and right. to make it a stage play.
And so when you create a character, though, you also become sort of their advocate. You're on their side. You try to figure out what they're doing and why. And so I also try to find those things that make King John sort of great in a way. And there's not a lot. But I did find out. I did find out that he founded Liverpool. So if it wasn't for King John, there may have never been the Beatles.
Wouldn't have the Beatles. So.
Whoa.
Okay, well, that may be a stretch, but we're going to let you have it. We are totally going to let you have it because, you don't get to tell that on stage every
right.
night. So here, this stage, of course you do.
And something that is not related that I would like to make sure and mention, if we haven't mentioned it so far, if you're under 18, you get into our show for free. We have a big educational mission, and giving people a chance to be exposed and see live Shakespeare performances is so important to us.
That
so
is
if
wonderful.
You're under 18,
actually, if
come
you're
see
eight,
the show.
Also, if you're
oh, 18 as well,
18 and
man, Annabelle. We're generous. So, hear that?
Nice.
So,
teenagers
if,
come out.
Hey, if you're a parent and you want to educate your children or just have a great time, bring them out, see
yeah.
us. But by the time you get concessions and pay for all the movie tickets, you would have spent a lot more money at the movie theater.
Yeah.
So come see some Shakespeare.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Thanks. And Shannon, you make a great King John. And,
oh, thank you.
Here you've worn a splash of color and everybody else is in black. That's for the radio audience. It's very cool to see, that come alive here on the radio, too. And I wanted to speak. We have a trumpeter here. We've got even some a tune to play. Can I speak? I know you've got
a tune.
You've got to come out from the corner, the trumpeter.
Yeah.
And You're on the board, right? Can you introduce yourself?
I am. I'm Mike Johnson. I'm a longtime Fairbanks resident, and yes, I am on the board.
Of Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, and you happen to play trumpet in the community band or Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra? Or?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I played in junior high and high school at North Pole, and I played also up at the university during the summer fine arts camps. And I even played about a semester up here at the university in the concert band. And I also played in a couple of drum and bugle corps when I was in the Air Force.
Really?
But then I put the horn down.
Until?
And I didn't play it again for about 25 years. Then, around Christmas time, I picked it up. And I'm telling you, it's not like riding a bicycle. It took when
your
I first
your
it's your embouchure and your diaphragm, and when I first picked it up, I almost immediately just threw it out the window. I sounded like I had never played a horn before, but I did this time. I had some motivation. I knew that this summer was coming, and there was going to be something that I could actually do. I am not an actor, but as the days went by, I played every day, no matter how frustrating it was. And I know I flubbed up a little bit at the beginning, but I sound
great.
So much better now than I did the first time I picked it up. And I'm so happy to be a part of this production. It's been so fun. I even have some lines. When you come
you
out
do.
To the play, I'll actually come out onto the stage. I'll play my horn, and I actually have some lines.
And the role you play is you announce the powerful, you know, the king or the...
Well,
you're kind of the announcement,
it's
the proclamation.
It's after a battle, and I announce that the English army has won.
Uh-huh. Well, that's quite the...
that's
France
what I announce.
Wins.
Whether it's true or not, that's what I announce.
You know, we will have to come out and see the truth there on stage.
The both heralds announced that both sides win.
I did omit that, didn't I?
Well, Mike, it's great to have you here on KUAC's Alaska Live. And congratulations for being a part and being on stage. And thanks for being part of the board, too. It's a really it's an important part of being arts and culture here in Fairbanks in the interior.
It has been so fun. It really has.
It's great.
And if you want to be a part of or be on stage yourself, we're going to have company auditions at the Noel Wien Library on August 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. So that'll be for the shows that we're planning in the winter and the next summer show. We're going to, you know, so come on out and tell us you want to be involved with the company. And
do you know what production it is for the winter already?
We will announce all of those things when we know them.
Okay. Thanks, Carrie. That's wonderful.
Anon.
And Carrie Seward, you are the managing director of Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater these days. And it's
quite
wonderful.
Recently. Yes.
Great. And you set up this show with me, and it is so wonderful to have you part of Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater. I know I've seen you on stage with it, right? Is that true?
Yeah. I started when I was a teenager with being, you know, a small part in Richard III was my first show in 1999. And I've done a bunch of different ones over the years, winter and summer shows. And some of the tours, the educational tours around the state. And I went to Europe with Shakespeare in 2003, which
That's
was really
right.
exciting. So I feel really blessed that this company has given me so many awesome opportunities to work professionally in theater and to see the world and to educate other Alaskans about this very important and beautiful poetry. It's still required in public schools. So as long as that's true, you know, we have a mission to teach everyone, the teachers and the students and the public, why this is still part of our culture, why it's still part of English literature, and why it's still part of entertainment. You know, I really love Shakespeare plays, and I think that, like, they just get better. The more you know about them, the better you understand them, the deeper the meanings become, and just the more beautiful.
In high school, I really never did look forward to the reading of any Fairbanks Shakespeare or any Shakespeare plays, because I think that I lacked that being able to go to see a production. I grew up in a small town in Kansas, and, you know, we didn't have this. And the interior and Alaska is so lucky to have winter and summer productions and Bardathon, which can really make Shakespeare theater come alive for, you know, young kids, high schoolers, adults, everyone.
Yeah, it's super interesting how taking Shakespeare plays and then putting them in the academic setting of read this play and then come and talk about it when it should be spoken. And Shakespeare wrote it to be spoken. That's what iambic pentameter is all about. That's how it moves the language along. So you learn about iambic pentameter scholastically or intellectually, and until you actually engage in it with your own viscera, with your own mouth, you hear it from an actor and you get it practitioned to you, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I think that we see that across the board. Children and adults feel like Shakespeare's unattainable. But when you have actors and directors who understand the action of the play, and you can see characters going through human experiences, and then they use this beautiful metaphor and beautiful poetry to express these really intimate human conditions, it takes it to this whole other level, that even if you don't intellectually comprehend what the metaphor is giving you, the image, if you let your mind go to that image, then the story is told, and suddenly you're at a place as an audience member where you know exactly what's going on, even if you couldn't say so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. You'd be like, I know these two characters are fighting over this thing. You know, it makes a lot more sense in action than it ever will on the page. And even the Bardathon, which is so great, because we read all of Shakespeare's plays yes. 24/7 over the course of a week. And we've been doing that for 18 years, which is one of our huge educational outreach things that we do. Hearing the words read aloud brings plays that you would think were just dead to life. When we read King John at the Bardathon this year, it was the first time I'd heard that constant speech that Carey did so well. And I saw your face when she was reading that, and the poetry about her son and losing. I was sitting next to my mom, who was reading that during the Bardathon, and I literally had tears because I couldn't control myself, because the poetry was so beautiful. And I heard this mom, my mom, talking about her son and the loss of that boy, and just the way in which Shakespeare is capable of communicating in poetry these super deep, meaningful human vulnerabilities creates this connection to community, which is the essence of theater, why the Greeks did it, why it's so necessary, why it should be a part of our culture and our common vernacular.
And I like when I see people I know on stage, but then I forget that I know them, and they turn into that character. And that is one of the coolest things, to be taken away through theater.
Yeah.
It's just part of living in Fairness. People are like, oh, how can you live there? It must be so cold. It's like, I don't think you know what we have here. And if you come experience it, these are some of the experiences that make this place just shine.
Yeah. And I think that being in Fairbanks particular, because it's such an extreme environment, we get to see extreme parts of our own self. And I think that really enriches the arts community that we have here, which is why we have so many great musicians and actors and painters and really a really great art scene right here in Fairbanks. And I think it's because of that extreme conditions, and it brings us in touch with more intimate parts of ourselves, and then we can express from those places.
Well, let's celebrate that, and we will see you guys at Jack Townsend Point. Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, 7:30, and on Sunday matinee at 2, and that goes through July 23rd.
That's right. That's right. Come on, stand up, everybody.
Yes, please, you take a bow. Day. Thank you so much, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater.
Thank you for having us, Lori. King
John.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Yeah, it's a real honor to be here. Thank you very much. And thanks to the crew, you guys out there. You guys don't see those people.
Yes. Thanks to the crew, Mac Landry and Heather Hintzman, the Alaska Live TV crew, and John Peralt for the FM radio engineering side, and Mark Rippey for back in the studio board operating. And I'm your Alaska Live host. I'm Lori Neufeld. Have a great night.
Support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, strengthening the community through support of the arts.